hey, if you're about 5'9 and 180 pounds, meet me behind Turtles Restaurant on Saturday night, Fight Club.
Come catch us fade, bro.
Right? How crazy is that? Hey, everybody. This is Joshua here. Welcome back to the podcast. Today, we're sitting down with Matt Clemmer and Hip. We're actually going to go over a little bit of Hip's history with addiction, and we also share some anecdotal experiences about being just the most positive person you can be. Thanks for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, thank you so much for tuning in for another episode of the podcast. And today, I'm sitting here with two great men, Joshua Carlton and Hip. My name's Matt Clemmer, and the three of us together have come here today to serve you from our table. And today, we're going to get to know a little bit more of who the legend, the man, the myth that they call Hip. Hip, how's it going today, brother?
Very good. Oh, very nice. So nice.
So nice.
How are you, Mr. Carlton?
I'm great. How are you guys doing? It's actually the first snow of the year. It's beautiful. I don't know if you can see up my window behind my shoulder at all. Probably not. But it's snowing. It's beautiful up here in the mountains. So happy to be here. I'm glad we can do this from like so far away. You know, I'm all the way in Oregon, and you guys are somewhere else. You know what I mean? So that's what works out.
One day when
COVID is eased up, I'll be there and just in the studio too. So that'll be nice.
Real nice.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to future ventures of this.
Right.
Where each of us will be at. Well, you know, who knows? We could be separate in different locations or all together. Either way, it's going to be awesome and still dropping knowledge and bringing it to everybody.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I think our listeners want to know a little bit about who we are. You know what I mean, Hip? What do you think? You want to tell us a little bit about your story? You want to talk a little bit about addiction?
Yeah, sounds great. So, tattooer. I've been tattooing going on 8 years. I have 8 years in August of this year. Yep. And man, so one, I think it's important to just go ahead and get fucking grimy out the gate. Long term in recovery, I have 8 years coming up in March. And I was a trash can junkie. And for those of you that don't know what that means, it's basically any means necessary to get high. So if you would have told me like drinking bleach would have got me high, I would have done it. And then anything under the sun. Sleeping outside, stealing from you, helping you look for it. You know, there's a list, you know, of the stereotypical junkie, because that's basically what I was, and felt that and didn't amount to anything past that. So yeah, that's me in a nutshell, or the old what I used to be in a nutshell, and where the person you see in front of you comes from.
And for how many years of your life were you in that?
Man, so I mean, all in all, that I can recollect, about 15 years of drug use. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm also affiliated with other groups and programs that have some literature that basically states that a long time before the drug use, we knew we were addicts. And I can look back and be like, yeah, I was a weird little kid, man. Weird as shit. The Berenstain Bears, I used to play Mama Bear. I used to also, on that same coin, play Crocodile Dundee. Torturing animals at a young age. Having no empathy for anything. Punching my mom as a little kid at her C-section scar when I wouldn't get what I wanted. Jeez. Yeah, torturing my sister, mm-hmm. breaking shit in the house. I actually set my house on fire twice before I hit the age of 5.
Wow.
Jeez. Yeah.
So do you know like what triggered it? Like, I know you had these issues when you were younger. Did something, I mean, obviously, you know, somebody probably gave you something to try, and I suppose that's something that started this whole thing, or... What was the drug that started it all? Was it marijuana at first, or did you go right into the harder drugs?
Man, so yeah, it was weed for sure. And So I always like to tell people that I am a mama's boy with daddy issues. Dad wasn't there, raised by a single parent, my mother. I had an older sister and brother that lived with us. They were substantially older than me, so I was the baby. And we lived out on 2 acres in Jamestown, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And my grandparents also lived in a house next to ours. We actually stayed in a cottage. And with my siblings being older than me and mom always working, the only people I had to fall back on were my grandparents. And they, you know, they lived their life. They done everything and were settling down. It was the golden years. So for me, I wasn't getting the detention that I was desiring. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, craved. It didn't matter if it was good or bad attention. I just wanted attention. So it was easier to get bad attention. And I don't think it was so much necessarily that it was easier, but it got the best reaction, or at least a reaction. So right. I just went with that. And then going to school, getting kicked out of the normal school and put into behavioral school, where at this time you're talking like mid to late 80s. So if you acted up in this behavioral school, the teachers would literally slam you on the ground and knot you up like a pretzel, wow. pick you up and carry you and put you in a room with no windows and shut the lights out and basically leave you locked in there for 2 hours out of the day.
Wow.
And daily you had to like make these behavioral contracts, which I never made. Lack of attention, being put on my schoolwork, super defiant child, like anti-authority, anything, put me behind a lot. So then I became an LD student, and got to, I think, about fifth or sixth grade. And my mom realized like just how far behind I was with my schooling, and took me out of that place and put me back in a normal school. And I got into football, and football was great. My grades improved. My physical appearance improved. I was coming into puberty. I was getting sexy.
Like you had an actual outlet now.
Dude, totally. And I was meeting friends and like hanging out with some people, and after school activities were positive, and exercise and jogging and running, and that led into me doing track and wrestling.
Do you feel like your coach possibly had a little bit of a smaller fatherly figure role? At least doling out advice and stuff, you know?
I would say with a little bit of hindsight, most definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And, it, you know, at the time, my mom was dating my stepdad now, and he's been my stepdad in my life for this whole time. But something about, because he wasn't my father, and my mom was real good about not putting him under the gun and talking shit about him when I was around. So I grew up thinking my dad was Superman.
Yeah.
And so this guy that was with my mom was just that. He was just some fucking dude.
Right. Right. It makes sense. So, not to interrupt your story, but remind me at some point, I have a fire story myself from when I was younger too. So, mine made the news.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, but, fuck, tell us.
Yeah. So, okay. So, I lived with my father had a stroke when I was, I think, about 12 years old. And it was looking pretty bad. He survived it, but he was in the hospital for a long time. So my mother had us move in with my grandparents, who I'm very lucky. I'm one of those people that had incredible grandparents. And mm-hmm. I loved living there. I moved all the way from Arizona to Kentucky and mm-hmm. lived with my grandparents. But it was at the same time in my life that, and maybe because of my father had a stroke, sort of like your backstory with you go through this weird development phase. And for some reason, I got into playing with matches. You know what I mean? And I remember burning my finger and dropping a match on the carpet in my house and like putting it out pretty quick. It made a small little hole in the carpet. But we lived right by a giant thing of woods and like the creek and everything. And my grandparents were gone for the day. So I'm like, now's my chance to really play with fire. So I took a big box of matches outside and I started lighting little ants and stuff crawling on leaves on fire, kind of like you were talking about. Looking back, it's like I wouldn't really harm any animals now, but I definitely did then, yeah. as far as insects go. But anyway, same thing. Like I let the match get down too far. It burned my fingers and I was like, oh shit, dropped the match. And because it was outside, instantly the forest was on fire. So I was like, wow. Oh my God, I freaked out. I ran inside for whatever reason. I thought I could get a towel and I'd like wave it out. That just fanned the flames, of course. So I tried to stomp it out, but melted my shoes. And I ended up just turning around and just going inside scared. And I burnt down like 40 acres of woods. They had to literally fly a plane and drop that red misty stuff over the fire. It was on the news. I'm probably going to be in trouble now that I'm saying it. I'm admitting to it, but I was a little kid.
Well, this is all allegedly.
Right, allegedly, yeah. Nobody got hurt. Thank God, no houses. Because there was houses like around it, but it just burned down to the creek. But I burned acres and acres down, and I never fucking played with matches again after that. That's for damn sure.
Man. Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, fire was amazing, man.
Yeah.
Well, when I said earlier burning the house down twice, I remember crawling up under my bed, looking at like the foam and lighting my dad's lighter. Because he was in the life for a good 3 or 4 years at the very beginning. And I just remember like the whole bed lighting on fire and I was underneath and I was just like, oh, wow, that's amazing. And then the next thing I know, my dad is yanking me out from under the bed.
Wow.
Busting my ass and trying to get the fire extinguisher, the pin out of it to spray the bed down before the whole house went up.
It's such a scary thing. I remember when I turned around to hightail it, like a car had pulled up and saw it and like, hightailed it out of there to get away from the fire and probably call 911. But I'll never forget going to school the next day and everybody was talking about the big fire. And I was like, yeah, that's crazy, huh? <You know? laughs>
What do you mean?
Right, right.
How old were you?
I was 12.
Okay, yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome.
That's the moment I decided I'd be a tattoo artist.
Hell yeah.
Right, right.
You know, the question Josh asked you, in the way he posed it, you know, he's asking like what drug did you try first or almost what drug started or got you sucked into addiction. Now, I've been with you long enough to learn that it's not the drug, mm-hmm. that it's really a deeper issue, that it almost didn't matter the drug, even though there's some harder and the heroin one's the killer, you know. For starters, I just thank God you're sitting here alive to talk to us right now, because all the times you almost died, you know. Mm-hmm.
Me too.
But, man, your whole life's changed. So for the people listening that are either still, you know, many tattooers that are battling with addiction right now, they want to stop, but they haven't. They may feel like they can't. They may feel like life's going to suck sober. You know, speak to them, those that are on the fence. They need help. They want help. All the tattooers out there, how can you convince them that life actually is better and it won't suck?
Man, dude, that's I wish I knew how to do that.
Yeah.
Ultimately, you got to be the one that does your own pushups. You can't pay someone else for it. But I will say, you know, Matt's right. It isn't about the drugs. I mean, it is, but it isn't. But it's like what the drugs did, they sedated my emotions, mm-hmm. is what they did. Because, I don't know, you know, everybody experiences trauma. And when we're young, trauma can come in many forms. It can come horrific, and it can be the smallest thing. And for whatever reason, we start telling ourselves these stories that turn bigger and mean more the more we get older. And I just, you know, after sports, I got into music and I found friendship there. And I remember smoking a joint for the first time and just, it felt good. You know, getting high feels good. It's fun. I'm guessing that's why the majority of people doing it. Little did I know, though, what I was really doing it for. And it was just for feelings. My dad wasn't around. My brother and sister didn't want shit to do with me because of the age gap. My mom was always working. My grandparents are old. You know, looking back now and hearing myself, it's like just excuses, 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 justifications. And it's like, but you're a kid. You know, you don't know what playing the victim is. Mm-hmm. And it just led into more getaway, like vacation time from reality, things I didn't have to pay attention to or feel. And once the drug started, the mental and emotional and the spiritual growth hindered. So once I finally did get clean, I think I was 32 or 33 when I finally got clean. When all those feelings came rushing back, I was like, you know, a 17-year-old kid again. Mm-hmm. I remember I didn't have a license for 14 years. So when I did get my license back, the first thing I did was throw some fucking subwoofers in my hoopty.
Right.
the stereo costed more than the car.
Right.
And the way I dress, the way I act, still to this day, and it's not shocking, and I get it, and I kind of like take it as a compliment, but me, Matt, and the amazing Brian Brenner were sitting down a couple weeks ago, and he had told me and Matt that like I have like a childlike spirit. Mannerisms to me, I guess, and I really appreciate that, because I feel a lot of times like I either missed out on a true childhood, or because I was just, you know, I wanted to be an adult. I wanted to do adult things. And, you know, drugs will bring that to you real quick. Adult jail time, adult probation, adult consequences. But, you know, like the saying goes, you play stupid games, you get stupid prizes.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah, you know, I'm just running from my feelings for years and years and years. I am a softie at heart. I don't like to cause harm. I don't like to hurt people. I don't like to steal from people. But once you embark and get so deep in that lifestyle, you got to play the role. So, you know, you have to be tough and showing no mercy. And, you know, by any means necessary. And really, like, in the midst of all this, I thought I was my own or Ohio's own Pablo Escobar. Right. And come to find out, I was my best client.
That makes sense. No. I think that, you know, I think our listeners as well as myself are very interested in this story because, as I mentioned before, I have an extremely addictive personality. I see how I could have gone down that path. I just happened to not, you know. I have smoked marijuana. I have taken acid before, but I've never done anything harder than that. And that was a long, long time ago. But when I put myself into something, I put myself into something 100%, 110%, you know, but I think drugs always scared me. I think that maybe I experienced them different. Like how you say it made you feel good. Even when I've smoked marijuana, I feel out of control. I don't feel like I'm in control. And I think I'm a bit of a control freak, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, for me, I was fortunate that nobody in my family was doing anything. I used to go to parties and pretend to be drunk just to fit in. You know what I mean? I'd be like, oh, I drank before I got here, dog. You know? So people have stories to this day of like, man, remember that party that Josh was at? And he was, you know, I was just pretending. I was just trying to fit in. My parents moved me around a lot. So I was always trying to fit in with everybody. So I'm very interested in, you know, what that story is like for you. And then also the discovery of life after that too, because you're flourishing now, you know what I mean? You're a well-respected artist. You know, the reason that I invited you to Evergreen was because of that. I saw something in you. So is it still a struggle for you today? Like you have all this success. Do you still have to fight it off? Do you crave it? Like, you know, I know when I met my wife, she smoked like crazy and I was pretty vocal about it. I'm like, I'm not into smoking. You know, I'm not going to tell you to stop, but she knew it. I made her smoke outside, you know, it'd be snowing. I'd be like, yeah, you smoke outside, you know? So she quit and she doesn't miss it, but I know sometimes people do. And I've known people with addictions that seem like they had their life greatly together and then suddenly they're in the ghetto sleeping in a car. I hope that's not too personal to talk about, but do you find yourself waking up some mornings and being like, fuck all of it. I'm going to go do it. You know, I'm going to throw my life away. That's how bad the addiction still has me. Or is that wavered?
Man. So yeah, you know, there's highs and lows just like with life in general. But the cool thing about being in recovery and what I've learned through different affiliations with groups, anonymous groups that I began going to early in recovery, I learned there's a bold statement that basically says, like, if you do what these people do, you don't ever have to use again. And I took that to heart. And it started off with me thinking I found a new group of people that I could manipulate, because I burnt all my bridges. Those ships had sailed. And in my mind, everybody did something. You know, how people are like, you know, like you, for instance, you don't do any drugs. It just, I didn't get that. I didn't understand it. It's a lie. But slowly and surely, like, these people knew who I was because I was them and they were me. And they just loved me where I was at. That grimy, lying, manipulative junkie. They just loved me and kept telling me to come back. And I kept coming back, and I started picking up values and principles that I could hold and utilize in my life out of my tool bag of all these things I was getting that I wasn't even aware were tools yet. So yes, do I sometimes feel like using? Yeah. But thank God that I've grounded myself around these other people in recovery, because when those things start to happening, one, I can't turn and walk around or look anywhere or go anyplace without knowing someone in recovery. Or that is aware of who I used to be, that can hold me accountably instantly. So the hip that's happy versus the hip that has something going on, there's a difference, and they can see the difference between that. And they pull me up on it, and I appreciate that. But yeah, it happens. You know, we just became legal in Ohio for medicinal use. Okay. Yeah. And I think it's going on about a year, maybe 18 months. But like, you know, in the Dayton area, there's a bunch of weed stores, you know, like out there in Oregon.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
And you can smell it everywhere. It seems like every car I get behind, somebody's smoking loud. And, you know, sometimes I romance the thought of what it would be like, but ultimately, if I play that tape completely back and just know that, like, my body don't know the difference between a joint and a shot of heroin,
right,
or a rock of crack, like, it's all the same in my mind. So it's like I fucking transform, dude. I go from 0 to 60 with the first one I put in me.
Yeah.
So. And another cool thing about being around people that are also in recovery, especially the newcomer, you know, I've got some distance between the dope, but on a daily basis, I'm always being of service to a newcomer, either answering the phone or giving my number out. So I get to see what it's like for them to be sitting over in the corner, shaking and baking, not knowing if they're coming or they're going.
Yeah.
And it really humbles me and keeps me remembering of those times when I was that same individual. Yeah. And, you know, I fucking shot heroin. I've smoked crack, you know, stuck rolls in my butt, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I've got the t-shirt for all that shit. What I haven't done is given a proper eulogy at my mother's funeral. I've never swam in the oceans of Japan. I've never given a tattoo seminar. I've never tattooed a celebrity. I've never walked my daughters down an aisle to give them away to a outstanding man or female.
Right.
Those are all things that I look forward to, you know, having a grandkid sit on my lap and ask me, what are those weird things on my face? That's shit that I want to experience. And I know that, you know, substances don't serve me, and we're supposed to feel, you know, like when something shitty happens, we're supposed to have feelings about it,
right?
And we're supposed to get through those and lie on other people and let them help you, and then you just rinse and repeat and do that for someone else when they're struggling. And that was a concept I just guess I didn't get when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's amazing. I've noticed I've noticed that sometimes, or actually oftentimes, people who have an addictive past and they're recovered or recovering will get addicted to the recovery process. AA meetings, Al-Anon, whatever, you know what I mean? Narcotics Anonymous. And I noticed it's like they need something in their lives. You know, do you feel like tattooing is a bit of that for you? Have you been able to kind of dive in as strong with your art? you know, are you addicted to being the best tattoo artist you can be? Because I definitely feel like that's my problem. You know what I mean? I've been tattooing for 30 years, but I still feel like I'm just swinging the sword every day to try to fight for everything I have to be on that top echelon. And I still lose sleep over it. We've spoke about this before, but I'll be teaching a seminar and I'll say like, yeah, I lose sleep, and people will laugh. They're like, haha, Josh Carlton. I do. I fucking do. I really do. I think that it's ultimately my stress alone from tattooing could have possibly even contributed to the cancer diagnosis. I don't know. I have no facts of that, but I was, I spent a lot of time tensed up because I'm, you know, how could I be better and stuff like that? And I, you know, I said, I saw something in you. So I think early on, especially, I definitely saw you were very hungry. Very, very hungry for knowledge. And I remember, sorry to go off track here, but I remember when you did a guest spot at my studio, I handed you my keys and that meant a lot to you. I didn't even think about that. And you were like, I would have robbed this person at one point. And here now he's completely trusting me with my with his keys to his one of the most important things in my life, my tattoo studio. Yeah. Do you remember that?
Totally, dude. Yeah. Like yesterday.
So that showed me, you know, how far you've come, but I could tell that it still very much affected you. You know what I mean? Like when we went out to dinner, you know, a lot of talks would lean towards like, it used to be like this, but now it's like this. And it's pretty fascinating to hear those stories. So yeah, I guess kind of rounding back to it, are you able to put what caused harm for good, basically, like by being addicted to being the best hip you can be?
Man, fuck yeah, dude. Like,
say, yeah. Obsessive compulsive.
Oh man, by the fucking carload, dude.
Right. I think most of us are. Definitely the best tattooers I've met have been that way. Yeah. You know, we're all a little crazy, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I'd change that, right? Because right. I think we kind of are where we're at because we took risks, because we, you know, did things out of the box. I remember my best friend, you know, Sean King telling me, you always have the craziest ideas, but they work. You know, you say, I'm going to do this. And everybody's like, wow, that's crazy. And you do it and it works because I'm a risk taker. You know what I mean?
Man.
I'm a risk taker. I think we all are. You know, we're taking a risk with this podcast. You know what I mean?
That's so, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. As far as obsession and compulsion goes, and like this is just another great example how those addict tendencies ain't even about the drugs. I mean, we share the same obsession and compulsion, and you've, you know, never fucking done a hot rail before. And that's just a great example. There's times when I can get so obsessed and compulsed with this that I start neglecting relationships of my wife and my children or my parents or my best friends or another addict in need.
Yeah.
And I get to that point, like the dope, I get real self-centered. I get selfish and I'm not really giving a fuck about what's going on with you. I want shit. It was happening, right before we started this shit. Like, I got you on a pedestal. I also got Matt on a pedestal, but you know, I'm fucking closer with him. We're like on dad son level. So like, I see that it's like, 5 minutes past when we're supposed to start. And I'm over here like shaking and baking, like, come on. Right. He ain't going to like me if we're not prompt on time.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, it's just the obsession and compulsion kicks in and man, it happens so much to the point that, and this is where like the fucking crazy and senile part kicks in. Because in my mind, while that's going on, I instantly am like, well, fuck, I'm in Matt's basement. If I speak up and say something, he's going to try to pull my hoe card in front of Josh. And before you know it, we're fist fighting in the front yard. And
right.
His wife's here. So she's on his side. So she's going to call the cops and vouch for him. And I'm going to be the one that goes to jail.
Right.
This happens, bro. Just driving just out of nowhere. Yeah. I get these fucking
the
insane
worst
thoughts. The worst, man.
I think sometimes. And, go ahead.
Oh, what? I was just going to say like that. I'll do a tattoo and fucking get praise for it. Hate it. I always tell my clients, like, if you're 100% satisfied, I'm usually like 60, 50. And if you're anything below 100%, I go home and swallow razor blades.
Yeah.
But like, I won't even post shit if I know certain artists won't like it, which
sure,
is like fucking stupid, dude.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, if you break it down, yeah, it's really like, wow, does that even matter? You know?
And what a way to devalue your client, you know? Really, that makes them feel real special when you do that.
Yeah. It's so interesting to watch because I'm so familiar with that feeling. And my wife has started doing permanent cosmetics. And after being around me for 20-something years, she's she's just as bad. I let her tattoo an eyebrow on my knee because it's a bone. You know, if it's, she's practicing on fake skin. She's done a handful of people on their faces, and it's gorgeous. But she just obsesses over it. She blows the picture up. She goes and finds her clients, and, like, she calls them in the wild. So, like, it's a client, like, at, you know, it's a family picture, and she's blowing up the – she's zooming in on how their eyebrows heal. And the tattoo she did on my knee is flawless. It's so beautiful. Wow. And she's literally going, well, I don't like these wavy lines. And I'm like, I literally don't see them. It's like the anorexic that looks in the mirror and sees a fat person. Because I would be honest with her. I'm like, yeah, babe, you're struggling. Yeah. Laser perfect. It's amazing. I have an amazing eyebrow on my knee. And she just looks at it and she's like, someday I'll be good. And it's like, man.
That's welcome to the club.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Welcome to your new addiction. Exactly. So I do wonder sometimes if I didn't find tattooing, if I would have gone down that path myself. Because, like I said, I had tried acid, loved it. Tried marijuana, and it was maybe more paranoid. I liked the acid. It was. I had definitely interesting trips. You know.
Me too.
So I do wonder if I would have gone down that road. But you know, fortunately, I haven't. But I've been around a lot of people. A lot of people. I know, Matt, you've got other people in your studio that have been recovering, and, you know, praise you for helping those people out. Yeah. I know, Hip, I've seen that you've lost a lot of people, you know. I feel like I'm constantly seeing pictures of people that you've lost to drugs, and I think that really shows you the reality of all of this, you know. And I think for me, something that I've noticed that's a little bit rough, and it helps people, and it might help people that have addictions, is so many people that are really successful come from a similar past. And it almost to me says, go ahead and do it while you're young. You'll recover, and then you'll be a badass, whatever, CEO, rapper, NBA player. You never really hear about people succeeding necessarily while they're on drugs, but it's usually in their past. You know what I mean? So I do sometimes wonder how that affects people that, let's say I was super fucked up right now in my life. If I was seeing that on TV, I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to get through this, and then I'm going to go that route. You know, does that make sense?
Totally, dude. Yeah. And you know, I've got some tattoo friends, you know, that I hold dear to my heart, and they're sweethearts. And, you know, sometimes, you know, like one of my buddies was like riding through like Sedona, Arizona on his IG, tripping on mushrooms. And dude, I was so fucking jelly at that. Yeah. And I'm like, damn it. Why can't it be me? And there I go again, comparing my insides to someone's outsides. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It's completely irrelevant, because if people, when I hear them say like life, what, that's not fair. You know what? I'm fucking grateful it ain't fair, because if life was fair, I wouldn't be here right now.
Mm. That's a great point. Mm. Yeah. Mm. You know, I've noticed too, an interesting thing, and this is not in any way to downplay your addiction, so please don't take it that way. But as somebody, my story, which we'll get into in another podcast, but I'll just a little bit, I suffer from severe depression and anxiety. Not so much after cancer diagnosis, because before cancer diagnosis, I'll be completely honest, we're being vulnerable here, I was suicidal at times. It's almost happened a couple of times. Pictures of my kids on the walls is what saved my life. But when cancer came knocking, and I was not the one in control of taking my own life. It could happen at any time. Nothing for me personally, man, that cured depression real quick. It was like, you know, why would I ever take my own? Like, all I want to do is live. You know what I mean? And for those that are not following me and don't know, I am currently cancer free, so don't stress out over it. But, it's crazy to think about how it used to be, where I would literally think about taking my own life. And when I look back, I don't even really know why. And I was so, like, what was so dark compared to what I went through now the last year with actually fighting cancer. But, it's just what I did notice, though, and I'm getting back to, is that I feel like somebody that has a past of, say, alcohol or heroin, and they did some crazy shit, like drove through a house and, like, maybe, you know, drinking and driving and drove through a house. And people be like, oh, but he's sober now, and they celebrate you. But I feel like when I was suffering depression, I had to keep it a secret. And if I had done something weird, my depression doesn't seem to give me a pass that sometimes it seems like addiction does. And again, not to downplay it at all because I just don't understand that. But have you witnessed anything like that? Like, I feel like as long as it's in your drug days, you can kind of almost cancel out some things that you might have done. You know what I mean? Have you experienced anything like that?
So, I mean, yes. So one, I totally can relate with you as far as anxiety and depression go. And I'm going to speak to that like I would addiction or anything in life, because the longer I've stayed clean, the more I realize, and this is a very profound saying, and I didn't really, I've heard it since I've been clean, but I never really grasped the concept until recent years. But it is, they say that if you are not the problem, there is no solution. And like, it's a cliche saying, but the depth that that has, that basically tells me that if I have a problem, whether it be getting high, depression, suicidal thoughts, that it's not these things that manifest that I say are like, you know, oh, my girlfriend cheated on me. The kids at school don't like me. I got a ticket. You know, it's all a direct result of me and my actions that led me to that point. And you know, disease, depression, anxiety, all these things are mental illnesses that people struggle with, and they're real things. But on top of that, you know, you get cancer. What'd you do? You didn't just, you know, sit around. You went and you got the proper medication for it. And help. Yeah, you got help. And that's the magic word when it comes to mental illness. Yeah. 'Cause you know what I'm saying? You got cancer. And you let that shit run rampant, I can see there's something fucked up about you. You're gray, right. You're losing weight.
Right.
Now, if you suffer from depression, I can't look at you and know that you suffer from depression.
That makes sense. Yeah, completely.
So I've always been told never to go into my own head without a friend and a flashlight, because it's fucking nuts up there and I got to have backup.
That's beautiful, man. That's very well put. Yeah.
And you know, my oldest stepdaughter, she struggles with suicide and depression and things of that nature, anxiety. And all I can do, I get angry at first, but recovery has taught me to like have empathy, because it's funny. My stepdad used to tell me, like, you can't fix stupid. Like, I was just stupid for the things I did, and just fucking stop. And it's like, it wasn't that simple. And here I am, like, regurgitating the same things that I heard. And but the cool thing is like, I've got some principles behind my belt that, like, once I say that, I can stop and reflect. And those people that I was talking about that are in recovery with me as well, or mentors like you and Matt, my wife, she's in recovery, they can hold me accountable and be like, that wasn't the right thing to say. And then I can give myself that nanosecond to reflect and then make an amends direct for, you know, thinking that you can fix stupid or, you know, losing that empathy. And I always tell my children, I'm like, look, for real, I'm about the same age level as you are mentally. So I get the self-centeredness, because yeah, I totally get it. You know, I feel sometimes that I'm the center of the world and that everything revolves around me.
I can see that. I think a lot of people probably feel that way. I think a lot of people just internally naturally do think of they're the main star and the rest of the world is actors, you know.
Man, dude, in the same breath, I'm the shit and I ain't shit.
Right. It's like that saying, you know, people complain about traffic, but they are traffic. You know what I mean?
Man, you know, I ain't never heard that one, but I fucking like it.
Right? Like, you're just sitting in your car bitching about traffic, but you're traffic. You know, you're in line at the grocery store and there's people in front of you and behind you, and you're pissed off because of the people that you got to wait on, but they're behind you waiting on your ass.
Yeah. Right.
You know,
and we're all people.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're bitching about people, but you're people.
Exactly. Yeah. So I love that. I try to keep that in mind to the best of my ability. Nobody's perfect, so I certainly will still do the same thing. Like, God damn, there's so many people in fucking line. They should just let me cut. I'm only buying toothpaste, you know? But
Man, and what an applicable saying that goes with, like, you know, something that I bitch at another tattoo for doing. Like, I know there's another tattooer looking at me like, this fucking dumbass.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And it just goes to show us, you know, this, I like to focus on the similarities versus the differences.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And once you get to a certain point in your heart maturity, we can celebrate our differences.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
You know, one of the most important things, that's a great point. One of the most important things that I learned in my relationship, I've been married 3 times. I've been married to my wife for 20 years, but I was married before that a couple of times. One, I just got married young. Second one, I got married because she was super wealthy and it was in Las Vegas and it's a stupid thing to do, but I did it and it was terrible. But I married the right woman now, but we have our differences. And somebody, I wish I remembered who said this to me, but they said, if you truly love somebody, accept them for who they are, because my wife will do something and I'll want to go, wait a minute, why would you do that? Why did you? And it doesn't matter why. That's just how she is. And you have to just accept her, how she's accepted me. And even with our own relationships as friends, like if you really want to be friends with somebody, you have to accept them for who they are to a point, obviously, if they're doing crazy, crazy shit. Yeah. But life is much, much easier if you do that. Like I call myself out. If I do that to my wife now, I'm like, yeah, I'm doing that thing again. Because somebody did it to me one time. I had a guest artist come out and they talked to me the same exact, it reminded me so much of myself. Like they questioned something I said and it made me feel like weird. And I was like, that's what I'm doing to people. Like, just let them talk, let them do their thing. You know what I mean? So what Matt was saying, that's a great point, you know, celebrate the differences.
Oh my God. Yes. Hip, I just fucking love you. And if you guys don't mind for a few minutes, I kind of want to honor him, toot his horn, and tell you a little bit what I've learned from him from my perspective and his presence being in my life the past, what has it been, 4 years, 5 years?
Five.
Okay, cool. Because, you know, he calls me mentor, he calls me dad. Well, what a fucking honor. But let me be the first to tell you all that I've learned just as much from him, you know, if not more. You know, this is where iron sharpens iron, you know. But Hip's taught me so a lot. But everything, how you were answering your questions, and because I've been around you long enough, I was able to like almost simplify it to like 3 or 4 categories. And this is what comes out of your language. Number one is awareness, self-awareness, and everything you were talking about. You know, the reason why you're able to talk about it or notice or be aware that that's happening in your mind right now, you're starting to entertain some bullshit that could turn into real bullshit, is at least you're at a place where you notice. Because some people, they just fucking go,
right?
You know, but you have awareness and you're taking responsibility for that. Two then leads to the tools that you got on your own personal tool belt on life to deal with life in your own deal. You know what I'm saying? Three is who you associate with. You know, whether it's your meetings, your support network, whether it's us and Josh, like who you surround yourself with, all that matters, you know? And I've watched you do it time and time again. But so let me give you an example, Josh, of the, and all the listeners here, of the depth of awareness and self-honesty and authenticity that this man walks in that inspires all of us. Example, he was driving into work one day and he was 20 minutes. He was going to be 20 minutes late. He had no appointment. No one was waiting on him. There was only one other artist in the shop, traditional artist, just working on a line drawing. Hip on his way in. So there's no repercussions really, except that he's 20 minutes late. Hip decides he's just going to make up a little white lie or a little story like, hey, dude, sorry I was late, but there's a traffic jam, right? Mm-hmm. Which we all do as humans naturally,
right?
Or at least think about, oh, I'll just say this, you know? And then the awareness kicked in. He stopped himself and he thought to himself, why the fuck am I going to make up a lie? Why, I'm not a liar anymore, ever. Why would I ruin it? And why would I lie now over this? So then he didn't. He just owned it. And he walked in. He's like, yeah, sorry, I'm late. And the dude was like, cool. Like, you know,
right.
That could have been the end of it.
Right.
Nope. Later on, an hour or two later, now the rest of us are there, is eating Hip up on the inside. So he comes back out. And that one artist, he has to get completely clean with him and says, yo, man, on my way in today, I thought about lying to you and telling you, but then I decided not to, but I just needed to confess and apologize to you for thinking about lying to you.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. You know? And that dude would have never known,
right,
none the wiser. And that level of like self-honesty, and then expressing it to others, not only is it powerful and inspiring, and it's like, holy shit, where have I been a liar to myself and tell a little white lie? You know what I'm saying? But the freedom in that, but that's him attacking something before before the disease can even take it and turn it into something it was never meant to be. But were you going to interject it?
That's amazing.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say that that whole story I told you was a lie, and I've just let it ride this long so you can like brag about me.
You know,
I kid.
that's interesting that you brought up lying too, because like I said before, I've moved around tons. I went to like 15 different schools. My parents constantly moved around. My dad was a con man, basically. He got himself into some shit, and whenever he got caught up in it, we'd just move in the middle of the night. So I lied to my new school to be cool. I was from California, not from Kentucky. Anytime someone said, did you see this movie or do you like this band? It was yes, just so I could connect with you. So I grew up with that.
Yeah.
Right? I grew up with that, not realizing that it would become a problem. And then, you know, when I met my wife, I was embarrassed that I had been married twice before. So I never thought we'd end up being married. So when I met on our first date, we were talking and I said, I was married once. I've been married.
Hell
and,
yeah.
And it was literally not until years later that she found out. I mean, I had brutally lied about this. She was visiting my family and saw wedding photos after I had lied to her. And it was incredibly embarrassing. It was so crushing to me that I literally had to tell her, look, yeah, you caught me. I lied. I was super embarrassed. I don't know what to say. And I don't want to talk about it ever again. I basically had to like shut it down. You know what I mean? So that was the day that I kind of realized next time somebody asks you if you liked the new Marvel movie, just say whatever you really believe, because I would always do you know so-and-so? Yep. I just was like, just keep the conversation flowing because I just moved here and I don't have any friends. You know what I mean? So I'm similar in a way. I'm very impressed with you being able to own that. And self-awareness is such a big thing for me, you know? So I do the same thing. Like you might actually hear me say, I just lied to you. Sorry about that. I didn't.
I've heard you say that.
It's never a big lie. It's always like a dumb, yes, I've tried this sushi bar or something, right? Yeah. And I just I just lied to you. I don't know why I did that. So it's so silly, but it's not a self-righteous thing at all. I'm trying.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to communicate with you guys or anybody else the same way that I'd communicate with, say, my wife, who I'm just very comfortable around, right? My friend Sean and my wife have two people I can be very, very comfortable, and they know everything about me. And this kind of goes into tattooing a little bit. I used to be I had a hard time communicating with my clients because they were very separate. It was like they're my client. And I've learned that if you talk to people like a person, like they are, you can really fix a lot of problems that could have potentially arise. Or if you like, if you ever met somebody and you're like, that guy seems like an asshole, but he's not at all, but you just didn't know it. Sometimes I'll be like, this client's putting up some flags over email. I'm a little weird. And I'll build this scenario of how it's going to go. And I'll go in knowing it's not going to go well. And guess what? Mm. It doesn't go well because I manifested that. Mm. So, you know, you got to bring it down to a level and just talk to them like a human. Because sometimes I don't understand what my client's wanting. Like I've got a woman right now that's wanting something and I'm having a difficult time understanding exactly what she wants. And my first go-to is just don't even do the tattoo. But keep doing that. Pretty soon you're not going to be working. You know what I mean? So,
right.
So just self-awareness, communication, it really carries a lot of weight, right? It really does.
It really does.
And that's fucking beautiful you said that because it's like, it's those little things that if you don't address them and nip them in the bud then, in a week, in a month, in a year's time, they turn into a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. And before you know it, you're fucking balls deep in drugs again. Or I'm balls deep in drugs again. Or, you know, you're in your fourth marriage and, you know, shit like that. So it's better to just keep mowing the grass while the grass is still at a decent height versus like letting it get out of control.
And it seems like. Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say it seems like a difficult thing, but honestly, it makes life a lot easier. Once I started not telling little lies, things got way easier because I wasn't like, what did I tell that guy? And I'm not looking over my shoulder. I'm just I'm just being genuine. It's like, you know, I remember a time you know, we talk about anxiety and stress and stuff. I was so riddled with depression and anxiety. This is embarrassing, but I'm just going to tell you the truth. I put out an ad, I was going to put out an ad and I didn't do it, and like a Craigslist to meet me behind some popular restaurant. Like I gave my height and weight to fight. Like I just want to fight somebody. Hey, if you're about 5'9 and 180 pounds, meet me behind Turtle's restaurant on Saturday night. Fight Club.
Come catch this fade, bro.
Right? How crazy is that? I'm like, what the fuck was I thinking? Like I just was so angry. No, I didn't.
I didn't do it.
Okay. I didn't do it. Yeah. But I told my wife and she was like, yeah, you might need to talk to somebody, you know, it's like, you know, but life is so much easier now. Like even all the shit I've been through, like by just being honest and being open and just being a real person, not the person that just moved here, you know, like I'm it took me 30 years to find out who Joshua Carlton is. You know what I mean? It took me a long time because I moved around so much and everything. And it's like, I'm just honestly like, even after cancer, I'm really discovering who exactly I am. You know what I mean? And owning it, you know, and
this
is me. This is me. If you don't like me, okay. But if you do, cool. We can kick it, you know?
Yeah. You know, Josh, a framework that we operate out of all the time, instead of viewing the world like always through a dualistic lens, or instead of looking at things as good or bad, right or wrong, insider, outsider, we operate from two frameworks. One, just heavy or light. Does this feel heavy to you, or does it feel light? If we're going to do something feels a little heavy, I've got to stop and investigate why this is heavy, and can I switch it to light or not? And if it doesn't feel light, then maybe that's an indication I should not do it or reconsider. So that's one. The second framework we operate out of is authentic or inauthentic.
Yeah.
Not good, bad, right, or wrong, just authentic or inauthentic. But back to that self-awareness, is I don't know about you, Josh, but I have been a liar to myself most of my life. And that's why I appreciate HIP's level and commitment to authentically and just being honest, but not just with the whole world, but with himself first. That's why that story I shared with you, that was really just between him and him.
Right.
But so that it didn't destroy him, he had to clear it and get complete, which was just so, so beautiful. It's just what I love. But this level of authenticity with ourselves, you know, to not tell little lies to ourselves.
Yeah.
I'd love to think about, Josh, how a few minutes ago, or how you're like, oh, wait a minute. Actually, I just lied to you and I don't even know why I did that. I'd like to imagine you doing that with yourself.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, so yeah. That's a great point. Like lying in what is one thing, but lying to yourself is that's a whole nother thing. And it can be super detrimental, and it becomes your whole life. You know what I mean? You have this, you've done it for years and years, and it just becomes who you are, you know? And it's like these little changes that I've made in my own life have helped me tremendously. And like, I would love it if our listeners, like if you are listening to this and you want to write in, tell us some stories about something that you've gone through in your past and some things that have helped you. You know what I mean? We'd love to discuss that.
Yeah.
And, you know, just to get fucking to set the tone, like there was back in the day getting high, there was this chick, she got pregnant and no one would take her to get dope. Well, guess what? That didn't stop me. I could care less about the baby. Yeah, I just wanted the money. So, you know, I'll take you and I'll run in. That'll give me a chance to pinch your bag and bring it out. And I'll continuously do this. No, you know, I've hid needles underneath my own stepdaughters, allegedly, on the way to get drugs by any means necessary. So you're going to tell me when I get clean, I'm going to keep my mouth shut about the life that I'm living now and things of like, because I know we're keeping that white lie inside leads and those little fucking things that people often operate in on autopilot. I cannot do that. And it's a love-hate relationship, man. I've constantly got to be aware of my environment, the people around me, what I'm doing, daily reflection, pulling my inventory and checking and dotting the T's and crossing the I's. Get it? I said it backwards. That was on purpose.
Yeah, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
I do what I want.
Right. I do what I want.
Yeah.
But yeah, dude. So if I'm going to go to depths like that, man, why wouldn't I go to the same depths to like live and create and help? It just doesn't make sense. You know, I see a lot of people that will go to extremes on certain things. You know, it's like, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts of like dudes, motivational speakers. And like these dudes talk so much about, I don't know, getting money. And then realizing now that they're older, that they neglected their health that whole time. So yeah. It's like, I need to keep everything kind of working simultaneously.
Yeah. Do you find yourself ever having like survivor's guilt?
I wouldn't, man. No, because I recognize that I'm a miracle and I'm on borrowed time. Yeah. Because I get to see daily dudes in and out, girls yeah. in and out. And I got to make it count. Like people rely on me. I got a family that relies on me. My parents now, I help pay their bills.
Yeah.
I just fucking, a dude bought me breakfast today. And because he brought me breakfast, I looked to my right and I seen two couples, an older white couple and a younger black couple. And I just told the waitress that I'm going to cover their lunch.
Nice.
And, the dude that was with me is like, why? I'm like, well, you did it for me, motherfucker. We got to keep the ball rolling.
Right. I know it seems so cliche, but just imagine if that ball did keep rolling, how the world yep. would change. Imagine if really, if every time we were able to do things like that. You know, it's not about getting points or clout or, you know, I'm always telling my wife, I washed the dishes for you. I'm not trying to get husband points. Like, I'm just doing it because you said you had a headache and I don't want you to wake up to this garbage. Like, it's nothing for us to buy somebody breakfast. It's not going to, the amount of money you spent on that's not going to affect you because you're a successful tattooer. And I understand that we have some privilege and not everybody has that extra money. But if you do, man, there's just nothing like that feeling. And you don't have to make a spectacle out of it. You don't have to film it for YouTube. You don't have to tell anybody even. But the feelings you get inside for helping is, it's to me personally, it's unlike anything I've ever experienced. You know, when priceless. I give to somebody, it is, I feel more than they do. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, I don't know. It's an extremely good feeling to me to give, you know?
Absolutely.
Well, which I think it is a big part of, like, you know, especially working with Matt and viewing what I do on a more personal level, because it lasts forever. Mm-hmm. And I like how you said, I think that I care more about how the tattoo turns out and looks more than the client does.
Oh, absolutely. There's so many things that I put into my tattoos that they don't even know and they wouldn't even matter. In fact, I found this tattoo artist who's super successful. He does this beautiful black and gray, almost always knocks sleeves out in 2 or 3 days. And from any kind of a distance, you're like, that is absolutely beautiful. And if you saw him at a convention, you'd say that. But if you get up on it, all the things I spend extra hours on aren't there. And it doesn't really matter in his work because it's beautiful. And sometimes I'm like, man, am I working, you know, am I not working smart? Am I just working hard? You know, because I believe in doing both. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I'm such a driven person. And I know I'll never get to the level I want to get at. But if I didn't put those things in my tattoos, I wouldn't sleep at night. I have to do it. My clients fly out to me for that. But this particular artist is fantastic. And I'm impressed that he was able to simplify his work and still have it. It's really powerful. I would totally get tattooed by him. But all the bells and whistles that I do, he's like, fuck that.
Man. You know? Wow.
And at the moment, because, you know, me and you've corresponded a little bit in our group chat we got. I'm trying to do to one. You shared a tip a week ago talking about an artist that you read on said paint faster, so that keeps the artistic brain going. So like I'm and one of the tattoo artists that I've always looked up to and love, he always says, be a good tattooer, not a fast tattooer. Love that. Carried that with me for some years now. But like as my style and myself and my life and my recovery grow. I want my tattooing to reflect that. So right. like now I'm trying to do like a looser, allowing myself to not be so strict on the reference image. And, yeah, give, and I'm an artist. Let myself be an
exactly.
artist.
And that's all I mean. I definitely don't encourage just tattooing fast for the sake of it. You know
right.
what I mean? But it's keeping you from second guessing yourself. You know, if you're like, man, I just really want to do this dash of red right here. Like I'm feeling it, like fucking do it. You know what I mean? Because yeah. those are the things that breathe art. You know, like yeah. anybody with practice can replicate a portrait eventually. That's not super impressive to me. I want the client to look in the mirror and feel it. I want them to, even if they don't know why, right? There's something you did with the eyes, just the right shading in the eyes, and they feel it in their heart. That's better than money to me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If I make it look exactly like your kid, cool, boring. Next. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah.
Dude, I love that you said second guess it because it just instantly reminded me. Evergreen's Championships. Shout out to Evergreen. Best convention I've ever done.
Appreciate it.
Definitely sets the standard. If you guys don't follow them, follow them. Again, it's like top-notch creme de la creme. But so the first annual Evergreen Champions, I actually was honored to be invited to. So I came with the gloves on, and the second day I was relaying my stencil, and you come creeping over, which makes me nervous always, and you're watching me, and you can tell I'm second guessing it, and I'm like, I don't know, what do you think? And you said, man, anytime I second guess anything, it's usually for a reason. So, and it's the stencil. So wipe that fucker off and throw it on again. Right. So oftentimes I find myself getting to a point and I'm second guessing something. And I say to myself, what would Joshua Carlton do? And I'm like, fucking wipe that shit off and do it again. Damn it.
See, and years ago you just said, what would Joshua Carlton do? And he'd be like, probably lie to you.
Right. Piece of shit.
Yeah, he really meant just let that stencil ride.
Right. You know, the whole second guessing thing is good, though. I just did a tattoo recently. It was just a face on the back of a really wonderful tattooer named Josh in town here as well. Joshua Steele. But he had some traditional work on his leg already, and I laid the face I was going to do, and part of the traditional tattoo went right up into the mouth area. And I was like, it'll be tucked behind. It'll be fine. But I could feel he wanted to question me, but he you know, and it was my wife actually that she was like, I think you should consider moving it. And she was absolutely right. We moved it to a better spot. The tattoo looked beautiful, but sometimes it's easy. Like you're set up and you're ready to tattoo and you just want to go. You know what I mean? But really take that time and remember, like, forever, this tattoo is forever, you know? Yeah. So let's make it the best we can. And it would have been, Josh, okay. It would have been fine, but you know, yeah.
In that moment when you said you could feel your client maybe wanted to interject or question or maybe ask, but maybe too scared to, or you're the fucking legend, you know, so I get that. So, but you could feel it, which is awesome. And then you said, you know, your wife stepped in, which tells me maybe she could feel it too.
She does at this point for sure.
But before she stepped in, well, how did you respond to that feeling? Just stay internal, like, not I'm ready to go, or did you acknowledge it?
I think I stayed internal, but I was also like, you know, and I'll be honest, it was probably a little bit of laziness. I was kind of like, man, I got to wipe this stencil off and it's going to be this, but a bunch of excuses. But I could look at it, because if you look at the picture of my Instagram, it's like, it's a woman's face. She's got a little bit of blue in it. It's really new, like 3 or 4 days old. And there's like a part of the, like this red leaf or something. And it was like right here on her face. And it honestly wouldn't have looked good. And now it's ended up being like below her chin. And I love the tattoo. I'm super happy with it. He's happy with it. It's one of those things where, like, in the middle of the tattoo, I'd have been like, what have I got myself into? If I'd have taken 5 minutes and changed this stencil to be a better tattoo, you know?
Right.
But I do tend to keep things internal a bit, because I used to have a really bad temper. And I'm always afraid that I'm going to, you know, I cannot work in these conditions. You know what I mean? I don't want to be that guy. You know, I know at the end of the day, I'm lucky to be a tattooer, and it's my job to do what the client wants. I do have the privilege of most of my clients are like, whatever you want to do. But sometimes they say that and then they show up and it's like, whatever you want to do, but not a skull or a woman. And I'm like, have you seen my work? Because that's all I do. you know what I mean? So,
I'm looking at that piece. I wanted to look
it
up.
So do you see the red, like whatever?
Yeah, and I've looked at that piece 30 times and never saw the red. Until
so you would have, because it would have been like right in her, by her mouth before. You know what I mean?
Right, dude. And yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, looking at it, it's like, yeah, it's a good thing you did move it because it looks great there.
Yeah, I'm glad that we did that. But like you said, it's interesting that you noticed that. I do feel things. It's weird. I know people say that, not to sound too like crystal and hippie-ish, but I 100% feel, I think even little facial expressions that people make, I pick up on it really well. Mm-hmm. So I can just feel it and it weighs on me. And I think that's another reason that I do like to give as much, because I can feel whatever this person is that needs something is feeling. Yeah. And by me giving, it's going to lighten the load on them, which lightens the load on myself. So it could be a little bit of a selfish with selflessness act too, to be honest with you. I'm still exploring that. I don't really care as long as I'm healthy. Yeah. You know,
that's right. Yeah, man.
If I get to feel good too, cool. But I really want them to feel good, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that hits on, you know, back to, in a big word you use, the importance of communication. So in those moments we feel them, most of us aren't equipped with the tools to act on it,
right?
You know, especially in the moment. We can all think back, shoulda, coulda, wouldas, but that's where the magic's at. Yeah. But the saving grace is when you're just authentic with yourself. Then it can be easier, at least more simple to acknowledge someone else's. If you're picking up on it, you know, that's why I always say we always get the feelings, we get the thoughts, but to act on it is a whole, you know, another level to create peace for all of us. And we know that in theory, but sometimes it's easier said than done, or a lot of us just don't quite know what to do or how to do in the moment, which is.
Yeah.
Or they come by so quick.
Yeah.
It they're almost like feeding or fleeting moments.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
That don't really count till afterwards. And you're like, shit, man, shoulda, woulda, coulda. If it was a fifth, we'd all be drunk.
Right. I'm lucky that my wife is super supportive of it, because, you know, you hear stories about like, you spent what on what? And it's like, if I tell Nikki, or she tells me even, like, I'm feeling like this, I gave this person a ride or money. She's 100% supportive. You know, she told me one day, she's like, you might be mad, but I gave a woman a ride today, and she was clearly a junkie. She was an older woman and she really needed a ride. And as a father, my natural instinct, and as a husband, was like, she could have robbed you, she could have this or that. But she's like, I just felt like I really needed to do it. I needed to help this woman. And I'm like, she knows how to take care of herself. She's a black belt in karate, by the way, or jujitsu, by the way. So she can handle herself. Wow. But don't fuck with my wife. Okay. She will beat your ass. We're very supportive of each other in those aspects of, you know, hey, because actually not too long ago, but it was right when I started tattooing again, I was in such a good mood that there was a woman in front of me and this isn't going to sound like I'm bragging about it, but just some restaurant, and she, for whatever reason, her credit card kept being declined. I don't remember why. And I was like, I'm going to pay for it. I'm not going to let you leave here without your food that's all bagged up and everything. And I didn't really think about it, but it was for her whole family, and it ended up being a little on the expensive side. But I was so happy to help. And on the way back, I was just giving money to all the homeless people too. And I kind of came home and I'm like, I spent kind of a lot of money on homeless. And she was like, you felt like you needed to do it. You know, I'm super happy I'm in a position to be able to do that. But I got to be honest with you, sitting down to tattoo after doing all that, I felt great. I felt so good and just ready to give my best to this tattoo. And, you know, I could have made excuses about giving somebody money because they're going to use it on drugs, and maybe they will. But I just felt it. I really genuinely in my bones felt this person does need this much more than I do. You know what I mean?
Hey, you ever had one of those go wrong or not as planned? Like one year I stayed a couple days, because usually when I go out to Evergreen, I always stay a little bit longer. A bunch of sweethearts that are security there. And I've really befriended and turned everybody into my family. Right. But so like I'm always a Voodoo Donuts. Love that shit when I go out there. I'm kind of a donut connoisseur. Well,
my shop shares a wall with Voodoo Donuts, so it's hard to like.
Yeah.
They're open until 4 in the morning.
Yep. So like, I've got a couple donuts left, and I'm getting off whatever fucking interstate connects Eugene and Springfield. And I pull into the gas station, which if you've never been to Oregon, they don't let you pump your own gas. Like, the SWAT will pull up on you if you get out and touch a fucking gas tank. But I'm pulling in there, and there's these two homeless dudes, and they're going through the trash can, and the gas tank fucking poor dude is like, get the fuck out of there. Get the hell out of there. You know, my heart goes out to that because that was me before. Mm-hmm. So I look in the back. I see I got me a couple of voodoo donuts left. So I pull down on them after I get my gas. And I'm like, hey, what's up, guys? You want some donuts? And this motherfucker had the audacity to ask me what kind of donut. I'm like, motherfucker, it's not a trash donut.
I have had that happen. When we first moved here, we were in Portland and we got some food and I had a lot of leftovers and we were walking around and I saw a guy with a sign and I said, hey man, I got a lot of food in here. And he goes, oh, that's for your kids. And I'm like my money's not, you know what I mean? He wouldn't take the food. And I saw another guy, this is big in Oregon, homeless people with signs that are asking for food, but it has to be vegan. You know,
it's oh, like, shit.
It's like, oh, you, shit. You ain't that hungry, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, now that's just an Oregon thing. But
yeah, man, I had someone bum a cigarette from me once and then bitch to me about the kind I smoked.
Yeah, it can.
My bad.
Yeah, it can definitely backfire. I always worry that I'm going to give, let's say, buy the couple next to me's dinner. And maybe the guy's macho and he's like, you don't think I can buy my own dinner? It's not about that at all. It's just
right.
You guys are just a sweet couple and I was watching you guys, you know, and I don't know. I remember.
Yeah. I always try to leave in situations like that or remain anonymous.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's best if you can remain anonymous for sure. You know what I mean? Like, you know, whenever you hear somebody donated money to build a wing of a hospital, but then they got a big plaque with their name on it, it's like.
Right.
How's that? That's just build the wing. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you guys are touching on this just because for the people out there that it's been placed on their hearts to want to try and like do some of these things and maybe never have, like, man, I don't know why, but all of a sudden I'm feeling like I want to maybe try out this being a giver thing, you know? And what I want to encourage all of you is, hey, there's going to be a time where it doesn't seem to bear fruit or it's not received, or they can may even seem offended or put off or whatever. Yeah. Do not let that discourage you. If you have one of those times or 10 that don't go great, do not let that talk you into going backwards and not being a giver no more. Don't let that jade you. You stick to your why.
Yeah.
And if you feel led to, like Josh said, if you feel it in your bones, and you don't have to be attached to the outcome. Know that you have an impact. Try not to be attached to the outcome and do it anyways and never quit doing it.
100%. Are you guys familiar with the YouTuber called Mr. Beast? Have you heard of him? So if you get a chance, you should watch it. It's so long story short, it's this guy. He's 22 years old. He knew he wanted to be a YouTube star. He kept doing these videos and nothing happened. And then one day he had this idea on live YouTube. I'm going to count to, I think it was like a million. It was crazy number. He literally just counted. But for some reason, that video was so weird that it went viral. And that one video made him a millionaire. He took the knowledge of that and he's now turned it into an empire. He's a multi-millionaire. But here's the best part. He's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet in your life. And he gives almost all of it away. Every video is him giving away incredible amounts of money. And here's what I've noticed. There's a really weird psychology with amounts. So he went to a college and set up a table where literally you got in line and he would give you $1,000. So every person that came up, he gave him $1,000. But when they would get $1,000 or more, they almost never really reacted other than thanks. But you give somebody $50 and they'd be way happier. There's something, there's a weird psychology of the amount. He had a contest where they bought an entire car lot of cars. And then whoever gave away the most cars, they split them all up, wins. He's going to give this person a Tesla. So people were literally driving around going, hey, man, you want this car? It's free. And people were like, no, I'm good. There's a weird psychology about what's he up to, what's really happening.
Yeah.
So it's almost like the more, you know, the bigger you give, you know, if I was to give somebody $5,000, there's a weird, like, what's happening. But if I'm like, man, here's my last $20, they're like, damn, thank you. It's really interesting to me. But if you get a chance, watch Mr. Beast. It's fascinating because he gives away sometimes as much as $1 million in one episode. But if you look at the video, it's got 22 million plays, which he ends up making more money
paying
still.
For himself.
He just does these crazy things and he gives away, he'll take a drone and just drop cash over a neighborhood. And some people won't pick it up. It's that weird. There's a weird psychology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why it speaks back to those of you out there going to try this whole giving thing. Don't stop, even if it's not received.
Yeah,
at all, let alone received well. And yeah, because when you are, you know, these days, you know, Hip and I get it a lot. Like when you're just genuinely nice to people, they're caught off. Think maybe you're weird, trying to figure out what's really your motive here.
I've heard that about you. I've had to not defend you, but you've come up in conversations and been like, oh, isn't he like, is that a cult? I've actually had that. So, and
then Kool-Aid's real.
And then the same person after they met you were like, damn, you were right. He's the genuine great guy. But you know, I think sometimes people are like, what is your agenda? Why?
That's
there's
right.
That, there's something you're doing because they're of a different mentality. And I get that. I understand that. You know what I mean? Like, why am I always so positive and so giving? What's going on? You know?
Mm-hmm. You know? I do too, which is when it used to hurt my feelings. It doesn't as much anymore. And I understand that's why the consistency of it's key. So many people in my life that would think on the front end, I must be fake. No one's really like that or really nice or whatever. Right. But it was the consistency. And sometimes it took years. Like even Joe Brenner says, like, I deserve like an Oscar. Because people think I'm fake. They're like, that motherfucker ain't broke character in 30 years.
Yeah.
I think I'm cynical by nature.
Yeah.
So, you know, this man actually helped change my whole outlook on professional tattoo artists in the industry. Cause fuck y'all. You're just a bunch of arrogant douchebags that think you're better than I'm going to do this myself. Let me go ahead and pop this CD motor out and learn what I learned in the joint.
Right.
And you know, along the line somewhere I met Matt Klimmer, and the artist was like, get the fuck out here. Matt Klimmer's in the lobby. I'm like, who the fuck's Matt Klimmer? I put my machine down. Back then it was a gun. I put my gun down and fucking went to the lobby, and I'm like, he's a well-dressed homeless man. So, you know, I'm instantly like, who the fuck is this dude? Right. So I'm asking him shit like, you know, what do you think about people asking you questions? And like, you know, the normal fucking tattoo questions, what you run your machine at, what kind of needle you use. And he just seemed to love. And instantly I'm like, I want to see where his head's at. Does his head match where his heart's at? And sure enough, it did. And then still to this day, he'll say some shit and I'm like, nah.
Right.
And I try to fucking to do some detective work. And yeah, it's pretty fucking authentic.
Hell yeah. It's not easy. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't, not everybody gets it. It took me a while to get it. You know what I mean? Like I said, I used to have a bad temper. And I saw somebody having a temper tantrum and I was like, I don't ever want to look like that. You know what I mean? You know, and I don't wake up and go, what do I need to do to be a positive person? I just right. own it and feel it and have it. And I'm, of course, my cancer diagnosis played a huge role in that. I'm fucking alive. I wasn't told 4 months, but all this stuff I read, the stage I was at was about a 4 month survival rate. So, you know, here we are a year later and I'm healthy. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I'm positive. You're fucking damn right I'm positive. I wake up every morning and I'm just happy to have another day.
Yes,
so probably. If I can pass off even a tiny bit of that energy to somebody to just make them have a – even if it's just like for an hour, like just complimenting somebody or whatever. You don't have to give them everything. Just
that's right.
Treating them like a human being. You know what I mean? Like I think we get caught up in – especially today, we're so divided. You know what I mean? I'm hoping we're going through something and we'll come back out the other side better. But people
growing just, pains.
Yeah, man. You know, I mean, it's like hate is overrated, you know?
Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah. So.
And it's just been louder. That's all.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so hopefully we can, some of you, if you're listening, you know what I mean? We can influence some people to keep this spark going. You know what I mean? Yeah. If we can keep this going and, you know, get other people to realize that there's something special about giving and just trying to be, you know, a helpful person, you know? Mm-hmm.
And like we had touched on in an earlier conversation together, that money's just one form of giving.
Right.
You know, we can give every day, all day, and money's just one form of it. And there are other currencies that have a greater impact. Our acknowledgement, our time, you know? And speaking of, and you brought up, you know, to bring the whole story for full circle, Ip spends a lot of his time these days, you know, he also making amends. For example, I mean, he went down to the courthouse on his own and asked, you know, went up and asked to be put on the docket to see the judge. And they're like, what's your case number? He didn't have a case, but he went back to find the PO and the judge who sentenced him to prison to stand before that judge to thank them for saving his life.
Yeah.
And they thought that was fucking weird. Like, what? Yeah. Like, you know, yeah. Making sure, like, does he have a motive? Right, here again, exactly. Someone's wanting to do something, but has he got a fucking motive? And the shock, that never happens. And he's gone back and thanked every cop that ever arrested him. We know a lot of law enforcement, and they get jaded. Mm. And it's crazy because the few, or the whatever, the people that they do help, Hip was one of them. A lot of times, like, Hip, once they get clean, if their life changed, the cops just never see him again.
Of course,
yeah. Dude, we used to arrest all the time on the street. He's either dead or gone. Just never see him no more. So the fact that Hip went back to find them all to thank them and say, hey, when you arrested me, I cussed you out and said, all this terrible shit. Dude, you saved my life, and I just came back to thank you. And my God. They needed that. And what he gave them was worth more than buying them lunch.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Imagine that feeling that officer had, those officers, and knowing you had an impact on somebody's life. Wow. Yeah.
And what recovery has done is now I've tattooed those officers. I've tattooed their daughters and sons. I've tattooed probation officers, magistrates. And it's like, it's just full circle, dude. I was their client. Now they're mine.
Right.
Like, shit don't get better than that.
Do you guys remember the tattoo artist Clean Rock One?
Hell yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he always had a story where he used to, the building that he owns that his tattoo shop is in, he was arrested for graffitiing it multiple times back in the day when he was a hoodlum. Mm. So he's back there painting and doing this bullshit, going to jail and all that. And now he's owns the building and is clean.
Yes.
I love that. You know what I mean? Yes. I love that story. You know?
Come on. Yeah. Man.
I wonder if he'd arrest somebody for graffitiing the wall of it.
Right. I do wonder, yeah. But yeah, it's always nice just to, like you said, you know, like you, when I handed you that key, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, speaking of full circle, like, you know, it kind of gave you a little, you took a pause to appreciate that moment that I just was like, here's my key. Of course, you're not going to rip me off, but you would have at some point. And, you know, you're a changed person for the better. You know what I mean? And, you know, I think if we can just all wake up every day and kind of appreciate the day and just think to yourself, like, what could I do to make this a better day? For myself, for others, you know, I think we could really add some value to life, you know.
And to speak to what Hip, who he is today, he had to apply courage for all along the way to build relationships. For example, there was a time, Josh, he had both you and I on a pedestal, hadn't met either one of us, and was too afraid to even write us or message us. I remember, you know, I'm in his town, and he was too afraid really to come holler at me and went through somebody else. But regardless, when I met this man, you know, he basically had nothing, didn't have a driver's license, hadn't had one in almost 15 years, no car, you know, and so... Two things before we worked together. Now, he had asked me 3 years prior, and I knew it wasn't time. My inner voice let me know, you're supposed to work with this man at some point, but not today.
Right.
And it took three. He wasn't ready, you know. But anyways, the day that I felt the release, instead of me just saying, okay, we can talk, I gave him one assignment, which was to listen to a teaching series, 14 different teachings, each an hour long. So it's 14 hours of teaching, and YouTube, it's called Your Wish Is Your Command. And I asked him to listen to do that on his own timing. Once you get through all 14 hours and meditate and marinate on it, come back and we'll have our first discussion. Take your time. You need 6 months, whatever. This dude calls me back in 48 hours. He's like, done, ready, you know? And I knew I could, by my line of questioning, could figure out, did he really listen to it? And he, I think, listened to it twice before, you know, just hungry. And he showed up, had made a t-shirt on the front of it. It said, empty cup, you know, like he is empty cup, ready to receive. You know, but anyways, on that day, that's when he decided to create a vision board. And on his vision board were
you know, basic things like a driver's license, a vehicle, you know. At the time, he also wanted a Kangen machine, which is a Japanese medical device, makes the best drinking water on the planet. But those fuckers are $5,000. You know what I'm saying? Like, some of the stuff on his vision board, I remember he put a Hawk machine on there, some money, you know. Well, dude, just everything started coming to fruition. He manifested and worked his ass off and achieved, obtained, and received everything on that vision board, made a new one, completed all that, made a new. I've watched him just grow so fast. And on that was also relationships with people in the industry, with guys like me and you.
Right.
And he was afraid to talk to me. He was afraid to talk to you. He was afraid to talk to Yogi Barrett, like so many people can be. The difference is, bigger than his own fears, his own insecurities, he did it anyways. He took imperfect action. And here we sit, you know.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful.
Yeah, it's amazing to hear the story.
How Matt was talking about that 48 hours and done. That's that dope fiend mentality, that obsession and compulsion.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I can see that.
I think we lost Josh or he's frozen.
Hello?
See, stand by. There we go. We got you back.
Oh, did you lose me for a second?
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
We thought you were giving us a mean stare.
Right. So, you know, can you guys hear me now? Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. To just, you know, to think about the story that you started this podcast with about, you know, where you came from and everything. Like, I'm proud of you, man. Like, you've come really far. You know, I'm just from one brother to another. Like, I am super proud of you. I see you. And, you know, like, you have so many great things that are going to come to fruition still, you know? And, I think the more that you give, the more that you're going to get. And I think that you really understand that. And I think that Matt's probably largely responsible for that. So thank you, Matt, for that, for sure. You know, but I just wanted to say, like, from just hearing a little bit of your story, you know, it's kind of amazing to where you are today. It's kind of unbelievable. So wow, you know what I mean? Color me impressed.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And you're actually a good tattooer too.
So a great a great tattooer.
Yeah.
I try. A lot of competition.
Everybody's so good now, right? It's just like when I was like coming up and everybody's like Joshua Carlton, there was like 10 motherfuckers and I was like, I got this. Right. Now it's like, you know what I mean? Now you got to gotta stand out hard because, you know, you've heard me say it in the past. Like there is no more who's the greatest or anything. It's just, you just be that top echelon is all you can really shoot for. You're going to have fans, but man, it's just, you can't be that. There's no best anymore. It's like, we're all striving for that little piece of the pie, you know what I mean? So just as long as you stay focused to who you really are, you know, and just do your best. Like I always say, like print your workout once a month and lay it out on the floor and just be honest with yourself. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Don't be mean, but just if that could have been done better, then do it better next time. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like the keto diet. You know what I mean? If you fuck up on the keto diet, the next day you don't overcompensate and go extra keto. You just start back on the keto diet. Right. So if you do a tattoo that is maybe you could have done better on, you don't have to go crazy. You just next time you do it, you get a chance to go back into that tattoo, you do it, you know. I think that stuff I've lived by for a long time and it's helped me out a lot. Like I can be really honest with myself without beating myself up and be like, yeah, maybe I rushed that a little bit, or maybe I should have softened that edge, or maybe I softened that edge too much. You know what I mean? Whatever it is. Next time. Mental note. I take a lot of physical notes, to be honest with you. As I get older, I find that note taking is really helpful. If I do a tattoo that I love, right? I'll be like, I use this color. I use this needle. This voltage really helped a lot. And because I'll just think I'll remember everything, but I'm 46 now and I won't. I'll be like, you know, so yeah.
Yeah, dude. That's powerful. I love that you're even making notes, like an adding it to their folder for your future self, especially like if you were talking about speed, maybe because you realize that went in their skin better than the last guy or whatever. That's awesome.
It just helps. That's why I make some of those videos on YouTube where I kind of explain things, because, you know, we've talked in the past and we can talk about this on another podcast, but even my finances by having this kind of journal of what I want to manifest. Like, that's what started the note taking in general. Mm. And but now I have a little pad next to my, I sit in a chair upstairs when I watch TV with my wife and stuff. And I have just a little pad, and it might say like, you know, just like a painting I need to work on, or a song idea that I had, maybe have the key that it's in. So I can just, if I'm just sitting there doing nothing at all, I'll just open that up and be like, oh, I better get on that, or I should go write that song, or whatever it is. Mm. You know, it's like, it's a bit of a to-do list, but if I don't have that and I can manifest it, like I can do manageable chunks, like one at a time, I'll get really overwhelmed. Like, I got 19 things to do, and it's actually three, and two of them took 10 minutes apiece.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I love that you always bring up the manageable chunks. It's so powerful and important. You know, another guy that I know went to a monk. You know, he went to like a monastery. He was living with the monks for a while. And they sent him in the kitchen to do dishes. And just like the Disney movies, he painted the picture like there were just stacks and stacks of dishes.
Right, you know? Right.
And he immediately started getting overwhelmed. And there was another monk next to him. He's like, oh, my God, I got all these dishes in front of me. And the monk was like, nope, you've got the one dish in your hand. That's all. You just have that one dish in your hand. You clean that dish, and the next one, he's like, you don't have all these dishes. You just got the one dish in your hand. And that's, that helped him. You
know? That's so how I live my life. Literally, like, that's a huge part of my life, because of anxiety and depression, it's very easy to get hypnosis, you get super overwhelmed, and I'll get mad. I'll be like, I have so much shit to do. Why did I take on all these clients? And it's like, all I have is the tattoo of the day. Mm-hmm. All I have is whatever, you know, it's like, whatever's in the moment, that's all I have. This podcast is all I have right now. I'm going to give it all my attention, and I'm going to devote myself to it. Life is monumentally easier for me personally once I realize that, you know. It's so easy to get overwhelmed and just not do anything, you know.
Just for today, man.
Yeah. It really helps. It's something my wife and I talk a lot about, and it's changed our lives. Like, I think that even though I've just battled cancer, I got to be honest with you, I'm happier in my life now than I've ever been. My life is fantastic. And a large part of that is because I accepted who I am as a person. And I know that I've got today, hopefully, maybe not tomorrow, you know, breaking things down into manageable chunks. Like these little rules that I live by, that I used to see people do stuff like that, and I would be envious, like, oh, I wish I could love the little things in life. I do now. It took me 30 something years probably to get there, but
yeah,
I'm happy to be here. And I have so much to learn, but I'm at peace. I'm at peace in my life right now. And that feels really good, you know?
Priceless.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever been at peace in my life. I just always was chaotic and I was just me against the world kind of thing. Like, I have to be the best tattoo artist there, you know? And now I'm just like, man, I'm just happy. You know, I'd be like, this sandwich is so good. Now, see, I wasn't able to eat a sandwich. I wasn't able to swallow a French fry. You know, like you don't know what you have until I'm at a tattoo convention, misdiagnosed and think I have something else. And I'm taking a bite of a French fry and I can't even swallow a bite of it. Mm. So to be able to eat a slice of pizza now, it's amazing. Like, you literally go every bite, you're like, oh, you know, so it's crazy.
So good.
Yeah.
So good.
Well, I definitely think that I'd like to hear anybody, if you know, anybody's listening, I'd love to hear some stories of your, you know, what's something in your life that's impacted you greatly? What's something that's changed your life? Like, what's a manageable chunks kind of thing that you do that you can share with us? You know, I'd love to hear some thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Always open to learn new methods.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Hip to the guy and the girl that's listening right now, and they're inspired. They want to get clean. What would you have to tell them?
Man, all you need is a desire. There's more out there than you think. You're worth it.
Yeah.
And you know, it can happen.
Yeah.
With me, you know, I got clean on accident. Now I stay clean on purpose. And what I mean by that is, my higher power was a pair of handcuffs and a jury of my peers, because they did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And there is hope. The tattoo industry and life need you. My IG is at hip _81 if anybody is struggling with addiction or wants to reach out.
HIP at 81 or _81.
Yes, sir.
HIP _81.
Yep. And, you know, that's out there for any tattoo artist, any person that's struggling with addiction or just needs, you know, sober support. Feel free to DM me. I'll throw out my number.
That's amazing.
That's what people did for me when I first got clean. So, you know, if I want to keep this, I got to give it away.
Right. That's amazing. You know, one thing, and I don't know if this pertains to addiction or not, because I know it's a struggle that I've not dealt with, but, you know, 5 years is going to come and go whether you are clean or not. So like, even if you're not an addict, you have a decision. If you're living, if you're in a dead end job and you hate it and you really want to go be a singer or be a tattoo artist or whatever, do it, start today, because that 5 years is going to come and go, and you're either going to be at square one and be like, man, I still wish I was a tattoo artist. Or you could be 5 years into tattooing and be a guest on this podcast because you're blowing up and we're excited to have you. So make that decision, take that first step. You know,
my goodness, an imperfect action,
man,
and do it anyways with courage.
Don't be afraid of failure,
man. You know? That's right.
Failure just makes you stronger,
and the fear may never go away. Yeah. So we do it anyways.
Yeah, and honestly, like, anybody that's successful has failed their way to success.
Exactly. You're never going to meet an Elon Musk or somebody and be like, "Yeah, it was a breeze." There was mistake after mistake, and guess what? You fucking learn. That didn't work. Not doing that again. Not blowing my money on that. You should see my first oil paintings. They were dog shit. And I don't say that to be funny. They were dog shit. But I
Can we get a link to those, Josh?
They're in the garbage. I used to dream about being in galleries. You know what I mean? And now I'm at a point in my life where that's a reality. And I never thought it could happen, but I had to start. I started with those garbage paintings, you know, and I just kept working at it. I kept going, and now I'm fortunate enough. I teach classes. I teach around the world. You know, it can happen. It's not something that I didn't just get lucky. I worked. I got up. I took the steps. I did it. I failed, and I got back up. And you can do it too. It's, you know, I know you can do it.
And the power in that lies is us learning how to fall in love with the process.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Because it's not just like, I'm going to commit to this. This is who I'm going to be, or I'm going to do. And as if, like, you can't enjoy life until you achieve that thing.
Exactly. The path is the journey.
My goodness. And you realize once you achieve or obtain that thing, even though it's cool, the real reward is who you had to become to even get to that place. It's the man and women we become along the way.
100%. And it's nice to sit back, to sit down with my wife and go, remember when? Remember when? Because she was there. She was there from the beginning. Remember when I used to say, I just want to inspire somebody. Can you imagine if I was in a gallery? Can you imagine if I played my guitar in front of 10,000 people? All of that came true, but I had to take those steps. It wasn't overnight, you know?
Yes.
We headlined in Belgium for my band, This Patch of Sky. Lights came on, 10,000 people easily staring at me, play that first note. This is a dream come true of mine. I couldn't believe it, you know? Not even just happening, but in Belgium. I traveled across the world. You know, and nobody can take that away from me. You know what I mean? And that's something that was a dream at some day, you know?
So beautiful, Josh.
Imagine all those successful people. Imagine Eminem when he was a kid, Lady Gaga when she was a little girl, just waiting to get out of her house to be the star that she was meant to be. She took those steps. You know what I mean? Like anybody can do that. You just have to have the drive, the desire, the heart, you know? It seems like a lot to do, I know, but you know, it can be done. Just, you got to go. It's time to go.
Brother. I love that. You know, my wife was reminding me 12 years ago when her and I met, and through our whole relationship, I've only talked to her about one tattoo artist. And she was reminding me that the other night, Matt, you've always told me just about one tattoo artist and who's always your favorite, but through 12 years now, you've only talked about one guy, and that's Joshua Carlton.
Oh,
and she was just telling
me, get a room,
like,
guys.
She was telling me, like, Matt, if I'd have told you fucking 10 years ago that not only would you be friends with Josh, but you guys would be doing a podcast together, you know, and I had to sit with that. That's my, a remember when scenario.
Yeah. And that's so cool to look back on that. I love that, you know?
Oh man. So fucking awesome.
Yeah, I think some people are so afraid to fail, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it's a process. And
Well, no, and we all want to fucking have a own a crystal ball. We all want to know what's going to be out there before we get there, you know. But fuck, we're not given that gift, you know. Even like scripture says, you know, one of my favorite verses, which I can't fucking pick, but it says, "I am a lamp unto your feet, a light unto your path." So, Josh, I was standing out in my backyard, and it was one of those nights, pitch black, cloud coverage. There's no moon or stars out, like pitch black. Now, I know what's in the back of my yard and the back of my fence, and I know I've got a swing set for the kids, a fence for the dog. I've got a shed. But on this particular night, I couldn't see any of it. And then I thought about that scripture, and I imagined putting a little lamp at my feet and turning it on. Now, can I see out there in the backyard way out from me? Nope, still pitch black. But what I can see is the next three steps I to take in that darkness.
That's awesome.
And I just take those three steps and the lamp comes with me. Now, can I see out there? I still can't. But what can I see? The next three steps.
That's so perfect.
And in the belief that my provider, my source, is out there in front of me, orchestrating everything on our behalf so that when we actually arrive, things are ready for us.
Nice. Yeah. That's, you know? That's so well put.
Yeah, man. Just three steps each day. Your manageable chunks.
I'm telling you, break it down. You break it down and it's all of a sudden, everything's possible. Look at the movie 300. You know what I mean?
Man.
That whole story. That's a manageable chunks. That's a story for that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guys, I think that that's probably a good spot to end the podcast here. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I feel good about it.
Yep. Thanks for, you know, showing up and playing full out with us today.
Yeah, man. Yeah. That's not easy to be, you know, open and vulnerable like that. I certainly appreciate it. You know, I knew of your story from like just a rough idea that you had addiction. I didn't know what or the story. And so I really do appreciate you sharing that with us for sure.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, a lot more people are judging you now.
Yeah. I know. I think I'm definitely not trusting you with my key anymore. So
Right. It's all right. I already made it in the family album. Right. That's all that matters now.
Right. Yeah. Awesome.
No, I appreciate it. And I just hope that like it sets a tone that like the level of transparency that we're going for with this industry, because it's important to hear the secrets and the flaws and the things, you know. I can't remember how many times I've just assumed you and other artists like your guys' caliber shit out perfect artwork or just wake up with sunshine and rainbows.
Nope.
And, you know, it's just good to see the good, bad, and the ugly.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that we live in this world with Instagram and everything being filtered and perfect, and we're all the same, man. You know, we all come from stars, you know what I mean? And it's all the same stuff. And, you know, we have the same struggles in different ways, you know? And I think that it's important to acknowledge that, to share that, and to help other people, you know, kind of heal from some of the stuff that they've experienced in the past that makes them think that they're not worth something, you know? You're definitely worth it.
Man.
Thank you.
Absolutely, man. Happy day. Thank you, Brother Hip. Thank you, Josh,
for joining us.
Thank you guys for your commitment of showing up just to pour your hearts out and see what happens.
And for all you listeners out there, obviously this is early episodes. It's going to get better and stronger. Yep. And we hope you stick with us and subscribe and everything. And definitely hit Hip up if you have those questions. He's a great guy and he'll definitely help you out.
Yeah.
I think you could probably hit up Matt as well. I mean, you can certainly hit me up. Mine is Joshua Carlton Official. I can talk to you about some things. I'll tell you how to make a badass peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Yeah.
Nice.
You got to grill it. Have you guys ever had a grilled peanut butter and jelly sandwich?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Let's try that.
Seriously good. When I first heard about it, I was like, that sounds disgusting. My wife made me one. And I was like, what? This is amazing.
Grilled on both sides?
Yeah, grilling on both sides. But, you know, the jelly will get real hot, but it's like if you grew up liking peanut butter and jelly like I did, it's just like the next level for sure. You know what I mean?
Wow. So, love it.
Yeah.
Happy day.
Well, awesome, guys.
Yeah. This has been another episode.
Yes.
Yeah, man. Appreciate y'all.
Yeah. Big time. Thanks to all our listeners for tuning in with us each week. Thank you to our sponsors.
Yes.
Thank you for